Good evening, everyone. This is a reconvening of the Committee on Health and Human Services and Housing. And we have an agenda this evening that begins. Is Senator Wicklund here? Senator Wicklund, did you have a motion that you wanted to present to the committee?
Yes, Madam Chair. I would like to move to reconsider Senate File 2526.
Senator Wicklund has moved reconsideration of 2526. Is there any, is that a discussable motion? I don't know. Is there any discussion?
We should wait till council gets here.
Well, we don't. Seeing that there's no discussion, all those in favor of reconsideration say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. Passes. And what is the reconsideration, Senator?
Madam Chair, it was moved earlier that we would refer the bill to state and local government, and we have since learned that it does not need to be referred there. It just needs to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Okay, great. So that's your motion to
that's
lay it
motion,
over for possible
yes.
inclusion of 2526 to be included in the omnibus bill, Health and Human Services omnibus bill. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. Passes. All right. Senator Wicklund, you will be presenting Senate File 2569. Hello, Senator Wicklund. Please review your bill and introduce your presenter.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm presenting Senate File 2569. It is the Housing Finance Agency unsession bill, and it is dealing with obsolete, redundant, and unnecessary laws and repeal and conforming changes. And Katie Topinka is here from the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency to kind of go through the bill. Oh, not, actually, first we have an amendment, a technical amendment to make. And Ms. Wyatt, do you have the location?
Or? Yes, Madam Chair and members, on line one, or page one, line 23, before section, insert article 8, comma.
Can you repeat that?
Would you repeat that on 1.23, in front of section 2, put
article 8, comma.
Article 8, comma, section 2.
It was just language that was inadvertently left out.
Okay, great. And that is your motion to include that language?
Correct.
Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Oh, excuse me. A little anxious there. All those opposed? Passes. Thank you.
I will let Mr. Pinka go through the bill.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, for the record, my name is Katie Topinka. I'm with the Housing Finance Agency, and this is our agency unsession bill. And we went through prior to session when the governor announced the unsession and looked at some things that we could eliminate that were either sort of obsolete or redundant and no longer needed in our statute. So I will just walk through the different articles in the bill and then happy to answer any questions. So the first article is related to a reporting requirement that the agency currently has. In 2000, the legislature authorized Minnesota Housing to develop a program that would provide rental housing that is affordable for families with incomes that qualify them for the MFIP program. It was called the Minnesota Families Affordable Rental Investment Fund, or MARIF. Following the legislature's authorization, there was an initial appropriation of $30 million in 2000. We made a number of loans under that program to develop rental housing. And then we are, Minnesota Housing is required, along with the Department of Human Services, to provide a report each year on the status of the families that received housing under that program. In this section, we are just requesting that we put an expiration date on that report of the year 2020. It's 20 years after it was we received the appropriation, and just thought that at that point it would make sense to no longer report on it. There are no new loans being made under the program, and so we just wanted to put an end date on that rather than have it go on in perpetuity. The next article, Article 2, Section 1, is another report. It's the elimination of a local bond issue report. Currently, when local governments issue bonds for housing programs, they are required to hold a public hearing. Then they must submit their plan to either the Met Council or their local regional development commission for review. And then MMB also publishes information about bond issues on its website. And then currently, going a step further, local governments are required to submit a report to Minnesota Housing and the Met Council on their bond issue reports, and then there's also a reporting requirement to the legislature. So we are proposing to eliminate those last two pieces, the report that local governments are required to give to Minnesota Housing and the Met Council, and then the report to the legislature. There's already a public hearing and other public venues for people to be able to understand these bond issues, so we just feel like those extra steps are duplicative. And then the third article includes a number of repealers of some obsolete statutes and rules. Minnesota Housing has two state-appropriated programs, the Economic Development and Housing Challenge Program and the Housing Trust Fund Program, that these programs that I'm going to talk about next have all been incorporated or are eligible activities under those two primary programs that we are currently still using. So I'll just walk through them quickly. The first is the Housing Preservation Program. This hasn't been funded by the legislature since the mid-90s. It allows agencies to make housing preservation grants to cities. And currently, cities are eligible applicants of the agency's challenge program, and housing preservation grants are an eligible use of challenge. So we just are proposing to repeal that statute. The next is the Rent Assistance for Family Stabilization. This was last funded in 1999. This was a demonstration project through which Minnesota Housing and DHS provided rental assistance to families receiving MFIP. The experiences of that program have been incorporated into our existing Housing Trust Fund program, and so we've incorporated the lessons from that demonstration project. Hasn't been funded since 1999, so we are proposing to repeal that statute as well. The next repeal is the Community Rehabilitation Fund Account. Again, this was last funded in 99. It's loans to cities, nonprofits, or for-profits for new construction or rehabilitation of housing. And again, the activities under this this program are allowable under our existing challenge program that is still used. And then finally, we are proposing to repeal the Employer Housing Contributions program. This was a program that allowed the agency to provide matching grants for contributions made by employers to housing development. This is something we still do. It is part of our Economic Development and Housing Challenge program. 50% of the funds under that program must have a contribution from non-state resources, which can include employers. And we work hard to try to get employers to make contributions. So this has been incorporated in a challenge, so we're just proposing to eliminate this separate statute as well. And then you'll see there is a section related to the Housing Development Fund. When the state appropriates money to Minnesota Housing, it first goes to the Housing Development Fund and then to the different programs for which it was appropriated. So Subdivision 5 here with the Housing Development Fund is just repealing the sections of that Housing Development Fund that relate to the first four subdivisions that I just talked through. And then the next part of this article is repealing a number of obsolete rules. And these are for programs that all have not been funded since the late 80s or early 90s. So we're just proposing to eliminate those to clean up the rules as well. And then Article 4 is just some conforming changes related to that bond issue report. It's named in another spot in the statute. And then the last article is a change to the state register notice. Minnesota Housing is the allocator for federal low-income housing tax credits, and federal code requires that we publish different pieces of information related to primarily demographic information in the state. And we certainly want to continue to publish that information. Here, what we're proposing is that rather than putting it all into the state register, we just put in the state register where that information can be found online. So it just really is reducing the number of pages that would have to go into the state register each year. And it had a nominal cost savings for the agency as well. So that's it for the bill. I'm happy to take any questions that members may have.
Thank you, Ms. Topinka. I will invite members of the committee to ask questions at this time. Is there anyone else who wishes to speak to this bill?
Madam Chair.
Seeing no one, Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Topinka, Ms. Topinka and the agency and the commissioner were down in Jackson to talk about affordable housing. Could you just, and I'm sorry I came in late, but could you just explain a little bit more about the employer housing contribution and the matching grants for that program? And you said it was for Greater Minnesota. Is that been used widely? And do people know about it, is what I'm saying. Is there the chance to it for it to be utilized?
Mm-hmm.
Ms. Topinka.
Madam Chair and Senator Rosen, yes, as I said, the reason we're proposing it to repeal it here is because it has been incorporated into our Economic Development and Housing Challenge Program, which the legislature has funded since 2001. And part of the Economic Development and Housing Challenge Program is that 50% of the funds must have a match from non-state resources, which can include employer contributions. And we have strongly encouraged employer contributions. Prior to the recession, we had quite a bit of success with some projects on the North Shore. Bluefin Bay Resort made an employer contribution, some in Rochester. And then when the recession hit, that became harder to get those employer contributions. But as you'll recall, and Jack, you know this from our meeting in Jackson, last year the legislature approved $10 million for a housing and job growth initiative, and that was for parts of the state where there are employers who are ready to expand, but there's not enough housing to meet the needs of the local workforce. And that's happening in Jackson and Worthington and Roseau and Thief River Falls. So this $10 million initiative, really what the goal of it was to get employers to make contributions. And there was, under that initiative, there was a preference for employer contributions. And we were successful in our request for proposal process in funding a project in Jackson that had an employer contribution from AGCO, and funding a couple of projects of multifamily and a single family development in Roseau that had employer contributions from both Polaris and Marvin Windows.
Anything further, Senator Rosen? Any other questions on the bill? If there when you're closing these programs out, did they have money specifically assigned to these programs that still sits somewhere, or are these zeroed out, no money left in these various programs, or will there be something left on the bottom line here?
Madam Chair, you know, the programs haven't been funded in most cases since the late 90s, and there is not money left in those programs at this time.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, Senator Wicklin moves that the Senate File 2569 as amended be passed and sent to the floor.
So moves.
That's your motion? Great. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Thank you. Thank you very much. Next up is Senator Wicklin.
Yes. I will continue.
Senate File 2367. This is Health Miscellaneous Provision Technical Changes.
Yes.
Updates and obsolete provision elimination.
Madam Chair, yes, I'm here to present Senate file number 2367. It is the Minnesota Department of Health, their unsession bill. And I am planning to walk through the different articles. There are people here from the department who can answer questions. There's several different areas, though, so I'll go through the articles, and then if there's a specific question, I can we can bring the correct person up. Article 1 has to do with the Healthcare Administrative Simplification Act. That was enacted nearly 20 years ago, and many provisions are now obsolete and have been superseded by others. MDH has worked with a large voluntary stakeholder organization and reviewed and made suggestions for technical and housekeeping revisions. These changes reflect the needed revisions and updates to the Administrative Simplification Act to ensure the Act remains up to date, clear, and fosters continued improvements for more efficient, less costly exchanges of healthcare business transactions. Article 2 has to do with combining reports on vulnerable adults' maltreatment. MDH and DHS are both designated as lead investigative agencies for cases of adult maltreatment under the Vulnerable Adults Act. Both lead investigative agencies are required to submit annual reports to inform the Minnesota legislature and the governor about alleged maltreatment of vulnerable adults in facilities and programs that are licensed by MDH and DHS. This legislative proposal would combine the two lead investigative agencies' investigative data into one comprehensive biennial report that can be accessed by consumers on both of the agencies' websites. Legislative change is necessary because there are current laws requiring separate reports by each agency. The production of one report will decrease duplication of work across the two agencies while providing more comprehensive information to consumers in one place, allowing for better tracking and trending of maltreatment incidents related to vulnerable adults. And I believe that it does state also that the information will still be provided on each agency's website on an annual basis. Article 3 has to do with tuberculosis. It changes the section to remove unnecessary references to tuberculosis because it's already covered as other communicable diseases, so the specific reference is not needed. Article 4 has to do with formaldehyde. The statute section 144.495 was enacted to address formaldehyde off-gassing, and there has been work in the industry to reformulate foam insulations to reduce or eliminate this formaldehyde off-gassing issue, and the state has had no resources to enforce or investigate complaints, and the statute is no longer necessary. Similarly, there's another statute that has been made obsolete due to the fact that building product manufacturers have addressed many of the issues by changing the adhesive used in making wood products. So a similar case where the statute is no longer necessary. Article 5 is a miscellaneous article. Section 1 has to do with removing a clause that referenced smallpox, which has been eradicated. Section 2 is a repealer. It has a pretty lengthy list of different repealers. I don't know if you want me to go through all of those. They have to do with pilot studies that have been completed or task forces that haven't met and are no longer necessary. There's a number of different items. I don't know if you want me to go through each one of those. And that, I believe, is the last article.
Thank you, Senator Wicklund. I'm not sure that everybody wants you to go through that, although Ms. Kavanaugh wants to point out to the committee that one of the repealers, would you report that out, please, to the committee?
Madam Chair and members, I'm just commenting on the authorization to remove a brain that we're repealing.
Yes. Unfortunately, the research project is complete, and this is no longer necessary.
The research project. Well, you know, with a bill like this, we got to have a little levity somewhere, right?
Yes. Yep.
All right. Thank you.
So if there's any questions about any particular article, like I say, I do have, there are people in the audience here to answer questions.
Thank you, Senator. Are there any questions on Senate File 2367? Seeing none, Senator Wicklund moves that the Senate File 2367 be passed and sent directly to the floor. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed say nay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And thanks to the department for the hard work on these bills. Senate File 2397, Senator Hoffman. This is quite a package we have here in front of us. And you have an amendment, I understand. This is another bill that relates to human services for children and family services, health care, chemical and mental health services, continuing care and operations that are obsolete provisions and need to be eliminated, elderly waiver, alternative care, and mental health services for children provisions that need to be modified.
Madam Chair and members, thank you. In front of you is a packet not quite this big, but this is really what we're doing tonight is taking some of the obsolete language and programs that are no longer needed, some that have not been around since 1913 or 1923 and still get revised, and we're going to clean that up. And so there is an amendment. Thank you for the opportunity to present Senate File 2397. This is the Human Services Uncession Bill. And with me at the table tonight is our own Commissioner, Lucinda Jessen. And before I turn the mic over to Commissioner Jessen, I would like to move an author's amendment A1, which should be in front of you, and I can briefly explain that to you. There is, if you look at two important pieces, and I'm going to start at the very bottom, 595.06. The language weak intellect it just is really outdated and old. And so, Ms. White, thank you and the department for cleaning up the language here. That makes it doable and accessible. The other one was at 517.04. At one time, the Minnesota State Academy for Deaf and the Minnesota State Academy for the Blind, the residential school administrators could perform a civil marriage. Well, it's no longer needed anymore, so we struck that language out. So that was just some last-minute changes, and that fits where we're at. And as well as you go up, we're deleting some references to clean up some language as well. So I would like to get this moved.
Senator Hoffman offers the A1 amendment. Is there any further discussion? Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed say nay.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. As the governor stated in his 2013 State of the Address, he proposed making an even-year legislation session the unsession. Except for responding to fiscal or other emergencies and passing a bonding bill, we really wanted this session to be devoted to eliminating unnecessary or redundant laws, rules, and regulations, reducing the verbiage in those that remain, shortening timelines for developing and implementing them, and undoing anything else which makes government nearly impossible to understand, operate, or support. That is why we're all gathered here with the purpose of understanding and then moving Senate File 2397. With that, I want to welcome our own Commissioner Jessen.
Welcome, Commissioner. Please introduce yourself, unnecessary, but for us, but for the tape, and begin your testimony.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. My name is Lucinda Jessen. I'm Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Human Services. And thank you so much, Senator Hoffman, for your leadership on and working with us so closely on this. I just, Madam Chair, members wanted to say make a few introductory comments. And we have members from the department here who can walk through, I would propose at a very high level, kind of the different sections of this bill, and then obviously answer any questions or provide any additional detail you would like. But if I may just say a few words about how the department approached this. As Senator Hoffman said, the governor asked each agency to propose ideas that are going to clean up our state statutes, and his plan was to eliminate over 1,000 obsolete and redundant or incomprehensible statutes. And ours really fall into several buckets, and you'll hear about those in more detail. And I believe you also have a summary document that might be a little easier to read than the massive number of statutes that we are proposing to clean up. But first of all, programs and pilots that are just no longer funded, no longer in place, or duplicative sections of statute that can be eliminated, rate adjustments for individual providers that have already been implemented, sections of statutes where for a specific date that's passed, and just removal of some obsolete or outdated languages that's already been replaced by a new model. But I would like to, before we dive into those, note that the department took this very seriously, as I think you can see by kind of the length of the things we came up with. And I guess you could look at this and say, well, maybe it's not seriously. Maybe you just there's a lot of low-hanging fruit at the Department of Human Services. But either way, I think we really tried to approach this and to make our statutes more comprehensible. But in addition, if I can just add one piece for, about the unsessioned activity at DHS, we're really looking beyond just this. And we've really looked at a number of things at the department, what we can do administratively to make government work more efficiently and better for people. And just to give you a couple of examples, looking at our state medical review team, kind of a, you all may know the acronym of SMRT, which completes disability determinations using this particular SSI criteria. And we put a team in place so that between what the county and state are doing, that we believe will be cutting the time that, those determinations take by half, which is really good for people. Our state adoption exchange, to getting kids once their termination of parental rights or other things are terminated, they're legally free for adoption, to get them on that quicker, to almost half the time we get them on that exchange so they can be adopted more quickly and have permanent homes. And another final just example I'll share with you, this is one that came from one of our employees when we did a lot of outreach, was to accept credit card payments. And, you know, this came up, I remember us talking to one of our employees at our state-operated services. But if you think about it, just in our child support area, we process 3.2 million transactions every year, and yet people can't pay with credit cards. Another example that I think really came from our employees and others, that, wow, this is a way to make the government work better for people. So with that, if it's okay with you, Senator Hoffman, maybe I could turn this over to Larry Haas from our Children's and Family Administration, who would provide a very high level of the provisions from that part of the department.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Commissioner Jessen. And there's going to be Article 1 that Larry's going to go over. And just before you start, Larry, I just wanted to highlight, we actually had fun with this. There's a PowerPoint that was put together, is it a state law or not, that we did with some partners and policymaking folks. And I'm sad to say that one of the ones I wanted to see go through tonight has to go through higher ed. And you wonder why, you know, we can't get stuff, you know, the bureaucracy of moving things around. But thanks to Ms. White for all her work on assuring a lot of this stuff is in there. For example, you know, the University of Minnesota has a psychopathic program that fixes defective people, and that's been just around the books and obsolete since 1923. And in here in this bill, you're going to see things like the sheriff, an unpaid sheriff can charge $5 to take one person from one state institution to another state institution. Well, there's no such thing as an unpaid sheriff anymore in the state of Minnesota. But then again, if you look at the bottom of the laws, it just kept getting, you know, revised and revised. So I just, it was really fun for me to do this. Excessive laws, rules, and regulations, and outdated verbiage, and anything that else that makes it nearly impossible to understanding what's going on hurts governance and it hurts people. And after months of preparation, having gathered input from many in and out of government, I believe this is a roadmap for reform. The department has brought forth something that's really going to help make some difference in people's lives. And it reflects the tenets of what our governor said when he called for reform in the areas. And so let's start with Jerry, and then I think you're going to go through all the articles, 1, 2, 3, 4, right? So be prepared. We're going to be here till midnight. So I'm kidding. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Hosh. Please introduce yourself, and you can begin your testimony. Just help guide us to what it is you're referencing so that we can follow along. And before you start, Commissioner, did you mention some kind of a summary? I'm sorry to disrupt. You referenced something that you thought would be easier for us to follow along with, and I'm not sure we have that.
Yeah.
is.
Oh, it is here. It is. It's a,
Madam Chair, right. I think I just have a different version of what you have.
I see.
Summary.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Excuse me for interrupting, Mr. Hosh. Please begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. I'll be covering Article 1, the Children and Family Services article. My name is Larry Hosh. I'm with the Department of Human Services. I don't have any exciting articles that Senator Hoffman overviewed before, so I'll try to do my best not to have your eyes glaze over. We have dozens of statutes that are affected in Article 1. Primarily, though, they fall into four categories. Unfunded programs that are existing in our statute but are not operating and funded. Outdated and obsolete references to such things as like the General Assistance Medical Assistance Program. Duplicative and redundant legislation that is in multiple areas of statute, and then lastly, erroneous or conflicting statute that we need to provide clarifications for. I'm going to give you kind of an aggregate overview of each of those sections and give you one or two examples of areas that are affected. If you do have any specific questions coming from the document with Senate Counsel, feel free to ask them. Under unfunded programs, Article 1 has five programs that currently aren't funded and that we propose to repeal. One example, these are all in Section 12. One example is the Family, Friend, and Neighbor Grant Program. This was last funded in fiscal years 2008 and 2009, and it was funded at a level of $375,000. And we have other programs, the other four programs, some of them haven't been funded back to 2003. Outdated and obsolete. References in the statute cover sections 1 through 7 of the article and also 8 repealed pieces of legislation. An example is one that we're proposing to repeal. It allows for a transfer of powers and duties from the Department of Education to the Department of Health and Human Services upon federal approval. Those transfers that have already occurred many, many years ago have been approved by the federal government. We don't need that in statute anymore. We also have six references to the old GAMC program that is now defunct and not operating that we propose to remove. And another example that we propose to provide some changes in language is in the GRH statute, in which we have a rate set for Grace Home in Minneapolis, and Grace Home is closed and doesn't operate. So these are the examples in the outdated and obsolete area that we propose to change. In the duplicative and redundant department, we have six repeals. Because of the duplicative nature, we have to repeal all these areas, but they all are in other areas of statute. For example, in Section 12, we propose to remove language that says that child care services must be available to families on a sliding fee basis. This is within that same chapter of statute twice, so we're just moving one of the subdivisions. Another example is the single benefit demonstration project. This project resulted in a new area of statute, and you're probably familiar with the North Star Care for Children. So since that passed, and we have that in 256M, we no longer need it in statute where it was in 25601. And the last category that we're dealing with is erroneous or conflicting areas of statute. An example of this is last year the legislature proposed to repeal the family cap. What happened, instead of repealing the subdivision that dealt with the family cap, you repealed the entire chapter, and that's not what we wanted. So we added a clarification to say instead of taking away that entire section of statute, we just want to repeal subdivision 6. So it doesn't affect any fiscals. It doesn't affect any current operations or projects. It's just adding clarification. With that, I'm happy to take any questions, and that's the general overview of Article 1.
Are there any questions for former Representative Hosh? Seeing none, we'll go to the next section. Who will be next?
Article 2, Madam Chair.
Jerry? Is Jerry Kerber? You all go. Please introduce yourself and orient us to where you will be in the materials in front of us and what you'll be covering.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Giogo Hayes. I'm with the Healthcare Administration at the Department of Human Services. I will do a brief overview similar to what Mr. Hosh did for Article 2. I put these into some bigger categories to try and make this a little easier for everybody. So there are several sections 1, 5, and 13, as well as several repealers that you'll see on the last page of Article 2 that just repeal old reports, reports that say, you know, due January 2009, due January of 1996. So just repealing language requiring outdated reports. Secondly, there are seven sections in the bill that take out some effective dates, simply things, for example, like starting effective January 1 of 2011, we will do this. So there are seven sections. Those are sections 7, 9, 10, 11, 12, 14, and 16. So no substantive changes in those ones. There are three sections in the bill that deal with language being stricken regarding federal approval. I'll go through those very briefly. Section 4 had some language that said upon receiving federal approval, it's an IAP provision, and it did receive federal approval, so we're just removing the language that says upon federal approval. Section 15 is related to alternative formats for provider directory and certificate of coverage, excuse me, for PMAPs, and there's some language in there that suggests that the commissioner could seek federal approval if necessary. It was not necessary to seek federal approval, and so we're simply deleting that statute. Section 18 is a provision that was passed in the last year or two, and it did not receive federal approval, and it has to do with a dental benefit. So it did not receive federal approval, so we're deleting that from statute. There are a few provisions that unfortunately did not fit neatly into my categories, so I'll go through them very briefly here. There are two related to dental grants that were passed in the early and mid-2000s. The appropriation for those sections no longer... there hasn't been additional appropriations for those sections, so at this point it's just language without appropriation, so we're deleting those particular sections. There, in Section 2, there's a small piece of language requiring regarding DISH requirements for just October 92 through December of 92, so we deleted that. Section 3 is related to Itasca County and allowing them to serve temporarily as a demonstration project. Since then, Itasca County has become a CBP, so therefore they don't need that language anymore. We're deleting that. Section 6 has some temporary effective dates and withholds for managed care organizations, but they were all temporary, have expired, so we deleted that language. Three more here. I'm almost done. Thank you. Section 8 is a time limited reduction for Merck, so we reduced the appropriation for Merck through 2002, which is clearly passed, so we deleted that section. There are two repealers that I'll mention very briefly. One is a Merck requirement between 1999 and 2000, so we eliminated that language. And lastly, 256B.69 subdivision 6C was a dental demonstration project that expired in 2006, so we repealed that language as well.
Senator Rosen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Hoffman, I briefly had a chance to talk to you about this. And Mr. Haas, it deals with the Section 18 of the Critical Access Dental Provider section that was that we passed in 2013. And exactly right, the federal waiver was rejected. I believe there are some discussions with the department in the coming up fairly soon, perhaps even tomorrow, about this specific section. And I was wondering if Senator Hoffman would allow the section to remain in place until we're able to figure out exactly what needs to happen here. I think there are other opportunities to make sure this is done right, but it is, as Mr. Yohas said, it is for a specific provider in northern Minnesota. Yes.
Yeah. Senator Hoffman.
Madam Chair, yeah, Commissioner, we might be talking about a couple of different programs here, but that's fine. We can accept that to make sure that we didn't inadvertently delete something that needed to be deleted. So yeah, that's fine.
So the motion would be. That we would delete Article 3, Section. We'll delete Article 2, Section 18. Starts on page 33. Is that your motion, Senator Rosen?
Thank
Senator
you,
Rosen
Chair.
Makes the motion. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Thank you very much. Who will be following you? Do you know?
Article
Dave is coming.
Chemical and Mental Health. That's Assistant Commissioner Dave Hartford. Welcome.
Madam Chair, committee members, thank you. And I will be addressing Article 3. And this article, Chemical and Mental Health Services, the couple of areas we're going to focus on, the majority of this was around children's mental health services and then a small amount concerning chemical and mental health services. So let me start with the mental health, the children's mental health services. And children's mental health, the areas really fall into three larger areas. The first is around the fact that we have transitioned since 1989 when we had the Children's Mental Health Act. We've been transitioning our services from basically a county-based support model to a healthcare model. So year by year, we have continued to take services that were in that act and change them to applied for state plan amendment and incorporated them. So those have been transitioning over the years. As a, for instance, family psychoed benefit was passed last session, state plan amendment, and again these services. So we have now transitioned many of the services, and that's what the this does is really clean up that obsolete language that was based on earlier. The second large area in there is around the relationship between our children's collaboratives and the children's cabinet. Initially, there it was conceptualized that the children's cabinet would give a direction to these children's collaborative, and it never really came to pass. At one point, the cabinet would approve application to become a collaborative, and that fell off at some point, so this is really outdated language. And then the last area is, again, around the collaboratives. The language around collaboratives being able to become managed care organizations was in the 90s, and there were two collaboratives that made some application, but this was never instituted. So, again, obsolete language. So that's out of the children's area. And then in the area of alcohol and from the Alcohol and Drug Abuse Division, we have a variety of small pieces of language concerning, let's say, the Willmar State Hospital, that was the hub of chemical dependency services in the state at one point. We had, at one point, the counties were really responsible to coordinate amongst programs that service delivery systems. So there's a number of smaller items in that category.
Thank you, Mr. Hartford. There's another testifier here.
Madam Chair, thank you.
Madam Chair, my name is Thomas Reuter. I'm the Director of Operations Support for State-Operated Services. I'm really here to testify on behalf of Section 17, which is the repealer section. As some of you know, State-Operated Services continues to update its operating statutes. That is Chapter 246 of state statute. We were here before the legislature in 2005, and last year, in 2013, seeking repeal or elimination of statutes and laws that no longer apply to the organization. And today we're asking again for your support with repealing or modifying certain provisions within this bill, as well as repealing certain provisions that are in state statute. Many of these were written in the early to mid 1900s, the earliest of which was written in 1907. Since 1907, there's been significant changes in the administration of the programs, as well as other federal laws and statutes that apply to how our programs operate. And the statutes that we're recommending for repeal here are covered either are no longer needed because of the changing environment in which we're in, or because of other laws that supersede those statutes. And I can certainly walk through each one if you wanted me to, or receive any questions that you may have.
What is the wish of the committee? Would you like them walked through? I'm not seeing any enthusiasm for that.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Are you sure we don't want to? I'm kidding, Madam Chair. Article 4, I think.
Article 4. Yep. Continuing care.
Madam Chair.
Oh, excuse me. Senator Nienau has a question.
Oh. I was trying to pull this up in the statute book. I see the language here, but I was trying to look at it in context. There's a provision, 246.325. The language is on page 19R, not the repealer language, but the statutory language. And what I was trying to look up and not take the committee's time was to see if in context this isn't concerning for me or not. But my concern, just on its face and looking at that, is that it designates the cemetery and the grounds of the state hospital, the former state hospital, giving it the title of Garden of Remembrance. And I do see some language in there that would be obsolete because the commissioner was supposed to approve some things, and that's all been done. But if we repeal the section, will it no longer statutorily be called the Garden of Remembrance? That's my concern with that.
Madam Chair and
Mr. Rooker.
Senator Nienau, the cemetery, this applies to the cemetery at the former Cambridge State Hospital site. That cemetery is named the Garden of Remembrance. There is signage there that names it the Garden of Remembrance. This repeal would continue to allow it to be named the Garden of Remembrance. We would not change that.
Senator Nienau.
Madam Chair, but my question was, is there some other place in statute that gives it that name?
Mr. Ricker.
Madam Chair, Senator Nienau, there is not.
Reuter.
Well, Madam Chair, I don't want to take up more time here and get into a long discussion. I can talk to Senator Hoffman offline, but if possibly we could change that instead of repealing the entire section, is just leave that first sentence and repeal all the rest of what would be obsolete language.
Madam Chair,
Senator Hoffman,
that's acceptable. Remember, you know, those graves were once unmarked. You know, they gave them numbers and coffee cans, and so I accept that as a friendly amendment, and we'll go forward with that. So thank you.
Okay, thank you. Let's hear how that amendment would be articulated. Thank you, Ms. White.
Madam Chair and members, I'll incorporate this section into Article 3, and it will read the Garden of Remembrance under 246.325, and that first sentence will be retained. The rest of that, I'm on page 19R of the repealer, mm-hmm. Sorry.
19R, third paragraph, Garden of Remembrance. So you retain the cemetery located on grounds shall be known as the Garden of Remembrance.
That's correct, Madam Chair.
I'll move that, Madam Chair.
Senator Nienau makes this motion. Any further discussion? Do you need to have the motion repeated? Could you repeat the motion? I'm sorry, they're trying to record these things here.
Yes, Madam Chair, and I will provide a written copy of the the amendment. First of all, we'll delete the repealer in Article 3, and we'll incorporate in Article 3, 246.325, Garden of Remembrance, and retain the first sentence of that statute and strike the remainder of that statute.
That's Senator Nienau's motion. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Thank you.
Thank you. Article 4.
Madam Chair.
Yes, excuse me, Senator
on
Marty.
On the repealers in Section 3, I had a question about two of them, which almost seem redundant, one of which is apparently a very recent one. The first of which is one that I'm guessing was 15 or so years ago, report on compulsive gambling, February 1st, every other year. And I'm just curious, I remember they used to have those reports, and I'm wondering if it just stopped happening because I haven't seen them in recent years, and if there's a reason we don't want to do that. And related to that, Chapter 245.981, compulsive gambling annual report, which is a similar one, but that says each year by February 15th, 2014, which implies that was done probably in the last year or two. Commissioner of Human Services shall report on compulsive gambling which seems to be a much more specific thing, much newer one. Is there somewhere else where these reports are being done, or are we just, is it falling off the face of the plans, or?
Madam Chair, Senator Marty, this
Mr. Hartford, or Assistant Commissioner, excuse me?
This report was just completed, and is if it hasn't been presented to the legislature, it should be. I'm not. I can find out if it's where it is, but it was just recently completed within the department. The piece that is in the repealer here is really around data that can't be collected. There was I believe, in reference to. But the report, and then trying to consolidate them into one report, that instead of having, there were two reports being ordered every other year. So this is the report that was just completed that the legislative, that's due to the legislature this session.
Senator Marty.
Chair, are you saying the 245-981 one is the one that was just done? Or that's the one that's hard to get data for?
Yes, this is the one that was just completed.
And is
Senator Marty?
Madam Chair, when you were saying that we can't get certain data, is the part must disaggregate the revenue by the various types of gambling, telling how much of compulsive gambling or problem gamblers the revenue is going to each of these forms? Is that what you can't get the data?
Madam Chair, Senator Marty, yes, that kind of data is really uncollectible. So in the report, we had to try to collect data from other states, and we did research around it. But that specific question and that data is uncollectible.
And then, Madam Chair.
Senator Marty.
I understand that one because it does seem redundant to the one on Chapter 4.47, the first repealer in your list. The governor shall report by February 1st of each odd number year, and I'm thinking that was from the 90s sometime, on the state's progress in addressing the problem of compulsive gambling. And that strikes me as the things in there strike me as things that could be reported on and so on. And are you saying there is still one other report somewhere else that we're not repealing that's still?
Madam Chair, Senator Martin, yes, that is going to continue on.
Madam Chair,
in another
tell
report,
me where that is anywhere?
And where is that report?
If it hasn't been, it should be presented to the legislature.
Where in statute, time. Madam Chair, is
yes, Senator Marty.
I don't have, Madam Chair, I don't
but,
know
but
that
there is, Madam Chair, there is one, though.
Yeah, we're asking yes. for assurances that that there is another reference to this requirement in statute somewhere if we repeal this language.
And I don't have that information in front of me. Let me... Yes.
The answer is yes, Madam Chair.
The answer is yes, that there is language somewhere else that assures us that this report will continue.
Madam Chair, yes.
Madam Chair,
Senator Marty.
Can I ask that we either hold off on, not as concerned about the specific one that you've just issued the report on, but the more general one in Chapter 4. I'm wondering if we could either hold this off or have a commitment that you'll remove the repealer later if we can't find that.
Madam Chair.
Senator Hoffman.
Why don't we just take the suggestion and leave it in for now. It's only a paragraph. So I'll take the friendly amendment from Senator Marty to leave 245.981 as it is on 16R. And
Madam Chair, I would
Senator
prefer
Marty.
To leave the one on page 1R of Chapter 4.47. Keep that repealer because that's an existing one. And that one I know we can get the facts on. I know we've had that before.
It's on page 1R.
1R, yeah.
4.47, report on compulsive gambling. The request is to retain 4.47.
Madam Chair, we might have a
delete the
Senator Marty.
Motion.
Madam Chair, we might have the site for you where it's at.
It's part of the way. Have you read that? I don't mind. Thank you. It's even worse. It's down somewhere.
I'd refer everybody while they're having their conversation to page 50, section 17 repealer. The section 4.47 is the area that Senator Marty is referencing. 16R. And the amendment would be to eliminate that language.
Section 4.47?
4.47. It'd be on line 50.17.
Yep.
Correct?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay. Madam Chair.
Senator Hoffman.
Madam Chair, members, the 1R, we're fine holding 4.47 report on compulsive gambling in there. I mean, there is a citation to the 245.981, but we're getting rid of that one, so that's fine. I'll take that as a friendly amendment.
Okay, so Senator Marty moves that on page 50, line 50.17, that we strike after the comma, sections 4.47.
Just keep the word sections, I think, Madam Chair.
You want to keep sections? Just 4.47.
Yeah.
Just 4.47. Is that clear? Senator Marty makes that motion. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed say nay. It passes. Thank you, Senator Marty.
One more question.
One more question. Senator Enow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. 246.16, that's on page 18R, has to do with unclaimed money or personal property with state operated services. If we strike this, is there some other section of law that regulates this, or what would happen when there's unclaimed money or property?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Reuter.
Senator Nienau, we do have so this statute is from 1905. And we do have a process presently in that we follow when there is unclaimed money. But the thing I would say about the statute is that a large number of our clients come into state-operated services and they leave quite quickly compared to how they did in 1905. For example, and the longest length of stay that we have in our within the mental health programs is at the Anoka Metro Regional Treatment Center, and that's about 100 days. So this statute was really written and targeted at a time where people came and stayed with us for an extended period of time. They may have lost their housing. They may have lost their relationships with family and friends. And that is not the case anymore. We also have a process where if things are left with us, we work with the county case manager to identify where that person left and went to return those items to them.
Senator Nienau. No? Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just couldn't stay away, Madam Chair.
Yes, thank you.
Just a clarification on the testimony that 100 days is the longest length of time that someone would be in a state-operated facility. Does that not include, though, St. Peter? Because that's an eight-year average, so.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Reuter.
Senator Nelson, that is for our mental health programs. The average length of stay at Anoka is 100 days. That does not include individuals who have been committed as mentally ill and dangerous who are served at St. Peter. So for those individuals, typically property is retained by their family at the point of commitment.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification.
Thank you. Senator Nienau.
Just a last comment, Madam Chair, and I don't want to eat up time trying to figure this out in the committee. I'm not entirely comfortable having nothing in law, but I understand the point you're saying that times have changed. So I don't know, maybe Senator Hoffman, that's something to think about if that could be looked at a later time. I don't know.
Madam Chair.
Assistant Commissioner.
Senator Nienau, all of the, because these facilities have changed drastically and are all accredited hospitals, they all have procedures in place for anyone who's a patient of those facilities, is really governed now by centers, by the federal government, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid, and also as joint commissioned accredited hospitals. So the policies and procedures are in place that protects the rights, patients' rights, basically, in the facility. So these are really obsolete and not necessary to protect those rights.
Madam Chair.
And just to follow up with that, so if there was a person who had a dispute or a claim that the hospital did not properly handle their personal property, there is a process by which they can have recourse?
Madam Chair, yes.
Senator Hoffman?
Madam Chair, and remember, this is language that was pulled when we had state institutions. This was specifically geared to those state institutions. Cambridge would have been one, Faribault would have been one. So this is really saying, no, there are other provisions in when you go into the hospital that would take care of this issue. This was really guarded toward the state institutions. And it says there, I think it's the first or second sentence, says institutions.
I think the point of the discussion, though, is to make sure that even though this is no longer relevant to our current system, is there a process in place that is relevant to the current system that allows patients to have some protections on their personal property while they're in care and then needing to leave. Is that correct? And that is in place. Mm-hmm. Any further discussion? Okay, thank you very much. The next section will be?
4. Fair warning.
Welcome, Stacy Muir. Would introduce yourself and let us know what it is that you're going to help us understand.
Thanks, Early. My name is Stacy Meyer. I'm with the Continuing Care Administration at the department. I'll be covering Article 4, Continuing Care Services. Sections 1 through 6 of Article 4 eliminate references to county contracting and the elderly waiver and alternative care programs sections of statute. County contracts with providers of all home and community-based services were eliminated in a different section of statute effective January 1st of this year. And with the elimination of those contracts, subsequently, the ability for counties to negotiate rates is also eliminated because of that elimination of those county contracts. So the language changes you see in those sections are updating the statute to reflect current practice and rate setting, which is done currently by the state. Section 7, then, as you can see, is a long list of repealers, all, again, related to continuing care. I'll cover these in summary, and I'm happy to answer any specific questions that you may have. The first category of repealers relates to old sections of rate-setting statute and rule for nursing facilities and intermediate care facilities for persons with developmental disabilities, or ICFDDs. These subdivisions and rules have been replaced with newer rate increase language or different authority for rate setting and statute. Much of the language in this category, as you can see in the text that you have, is relating to the old Rule 50 way of setting rates for nursing facilities. The second category of repealers relates to old instructions for the commissioner for one-time legislative reports and recommendations, submitting amendments to the federal government, and or promulgating rules. Many of these instructions are from the 1990s. One example is a section that requires the Board on Aging to report to the legislature on a proposed policy for long-term care on January 1st of 1977. The third category is removing old demonstration and pilot projects that are no longer operating or are no longer funded, or did not receive federal approval. These include the consumer-directed home care project, the self-directed supports option, and MINDO, or the Minnesota Disability Health Options Program, which is no longer operational. These pilot programs have either been incorporated into other programs, such as the case for our self-directed pilot projects, are never approved by the federal government, or as I mentioned earlier in the case of MINDO, no longer exist. The last category of the repealers in this section are related to removing old sections of statute for services for people who are deaf or hard of hearing. The first repealer requires the department to maintain a registry of persons and provide services to people who are deaf or hard of hearing. This law originally passed in 1957, and the gathering of the registry has no longer taken place. There was never a reasonable mechanism for the department to find people across the state as who are deaf and hard of hearing. We do maintain information on all people who come to the department for services, but that is a small portion of the people who may be deaf or hard of hearing in the state. And subsequently, which is also being removed in this language, is the authority for services for people who are deaf and hard of hearing. And our authority now exists in other sections of statute, primarily in section chapter 256C. The second repealer related to services to persons who are deaf and hard of hearing removes requirements for operators of Minneapolis and St. Paul bus terminals to provide TDDs, or telecommunications devices for the deaf. And again, this passed in the late 80s, and newer laws have since passed that govern accessibility for these types of facilities and buildings. As I said earlier, that is a summary of Article 4. I'm happy to answer any specific questions the committee members may have.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Ms. Meyer? Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, it's a little scary to feel you were author of bills that are now long obsolete.
Are you recognizing some of them?
TDD bill and so on.
I know.
Madam Chair, maybe we should.
How old are they?
Late 80s.
Senator Marty's autograph, Madam Chair. That's Article 4, Madam Chair. There's one more, Article 5.
Okay, so no further questions on Article 4. Seeing none, then we can go to Jerry Kerber, who will be focusing on Article 5, did you say?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Article 5. Yep.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Jerry Kerber. I'm head of the Inspector General's Office at the Department of Human Services. This was an interesting challenge. I didn't think we would be able to find any outdated provisions in our licensing statutes and Relative Data Practices Act and Background Study Act, but certainly we did. We found eight sections that had some language that could be stricken, and there are four repealers in here. And I can just walk through them quickly. Section 1 deals with some changes to the Data Practices Act. It's redundant language, and in some cases it's out of date compared to other sections that have been amended more recently. Some of those provisions also dealt with some issues in the Background Study Act that has some very specific data practices directives. And so they're being repealed here. The Section 2 language is dealing with some language that has actually sunsetted. There was a provision that was effective until August 1st of 2013, and it related to bed closures in adult foster care homes where they're serving people with mental illness. There's another provision that has taken its place that does the job better, so that's not necessary. Sections 3, 4, and 5 are related to child care center training requirements. And you may recall last year we had a fairly significant initiative regarding safe sleep practices in childcare. And in that activity, we had a number of amendments to the training requirements for childcare providers. In that process, unfortunately, we missed some of the corresponding changes that needed to be made to the training requirements. So this is kind of cleaning that up. The next, that was 3, 4, 5. Sections 6 and 7 are in the Background Study Act in Chapter 245C, and these are provisions that deal with transitionary periods that we had. You may recall that there were some in 2007, for instance, there was a movement of background studies that were previously done by counties for child foster care providers. That responsibility was moved to the state, and we had a sort of a complicated transition period where some things were be done by the county, some by the state, and that's all past us. The next year, there was another provision for adult foster care that did the same thing, and so those sections are no longer needed. That's 6 and 7. And then Section 8, finally, is a section of the Maltreatment of Minors Act that required a report to the legislature in 2007 that was completed, and it had to do with recommendations for who does what type of investigation, and as a result of that, there have been some clarifications in the maltreatment statute regarding who is the lead agency in different settings. So then there are four repealers, and the repealers... The first two deal with interpretive guidelines We had the authority to do interpretive guidelines at one time, but there was a separate bill since then that repealed all interpretive guideline authority, and this that never got cleaned up in our statute. Another one has to do with the 245A11, has to do with a provision that required a report to the legislature in 1985 that had to be acted on by 1990, and it had to do with over-concentration and dispersal of mental health programs within the community. That has all been acted on, and there has been other language put in place about that restricts the co-location in a community of residential programs. And then the final one is a repealer regarding the central entry point, the common entry point, as it's called. It's that access point to which everybody is expected to make maltreatment reports under the Vulnerable Adult Act. You may recall last year there was language that moves that function from the 87 counties to the state, and that's under development right now. This provision required the department to request federal funding to do that. That federal funding has not been received, but there's other funding, and I don't know exactly where that funding came from, but it is underway. So the development is underway, and this language directing the commissioner to request that federal funding is not necessary. So that was Article 5. And the last article.
That was 1992.
Yes.
All right. That's the completion of Article 5. Are there any questions? I do not see any questions. So that completes everything that you have to report to us tonight, Senator Hoffman?
It is, Madam Chair. And I just want to thank, I want to make sure we acknowledge our staff, Katie Kavanagh, Joan White, and David. David, I'm sorry. I'm not even going to attempt to say I can never. I get it wrong every time, so just please accept my apology before I even try. But and the DHS, I mean, we took what the governor said to heart, and what you have in front of you is, I think, a good start to changing some things. We still got some work to do. I'm going to bring a couple more bills in front of you that will help clean up some language, like prohibition of marriage, stuff like that. But it's not part of this one, so I just want to thank everybody for the collaborative and hard work we did on this. So with that, Madam Chair, I want to move to pass Senate File 2397 as amended and ask that it be referred to state and local government. Judiciary.
I think the decision, it looks like we may have to go to judiciary.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And not to state and local, but so, that's not. Okay. You'd be more grateful if it was going to state and local government.
I would be. I would be like doing backflips right now. If, you know. Maybe we could
do both. Okay, pardon?
Maybe we could do both. Yeah.
Can we vote on that?
Okay, so Senate File 2397, Senator Hoffman moves be passed and referred to. Passed as amended, and referred to judiciary. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. Thank you very much. And I think that concludes the business for us this evening, so we are adjourned.